let that one play. That's the part I'm waiting for. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez tonight. Thanks for being with us and sharing part of your evening with us, my night owl friends. I am grateful to you for doing so, for choosing us over like playing with your phones, for playing Angry Birds or Pokemon or whatever. By the way, I saw a giant Pokemon, like an actual one. I've never played the Pokemon Go, but like a dude in a Pokemon outfit sprinting through, sprinting over by the fountains in Millennium Park today, like hauling ass, and all these little children were chasing him. It was so spectacular. I was in a taxi and I was like, whoa, slow down. I got to get a picture of that.
That should be Pokemon Go, the game. That sounds way better than
playing
on your phone.
It kind of made me want to just like get a Pokemon outfit and just like sprint down Michigan Avenue because it was spectacular. My friends, we have come to the time in the program in which we call our good friend Rex Hupke because there are so many things to discuss. We can't go very long without talking with him because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the world to talk about, and we need to talk about it with Rex. Welcome to the program, Rex Hupke.
Always a pleasure. How are you doing?
Hello. Thanks for staying up late. We appreciate it very much.
Absolutely.
So, let's see. We enjoy talking about politics, and there are many of those things, because that's a topic that keeps on giving right now in our world.
It sure does. Wow. Yeah, today being no exception.
Yeah. So today, I don't even know where to start. So there were some remarks made by Trump, kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, Second Amendment folks, perhaps we could deal with this Hillary situation if she is elected and appoints judges you don't like. And the implication being that someone would shoot her. And, you know, there were a lot of op-eds written about it and a lot of people. One of them was just kind of like, hey, no matter where you fall on the gun issue, you please take notice of, like, recognize what's wrong with what just happened. Someone who's trying to be a world leader just threatened someone else who's trying to be a world leader or implied that she should be shot.
Right. Yeah, that was, I would call that unusual. You know that when the Secret Service is acknowledging what happened as a thing that they're aware of. You're in highly unusual territory, obviously. You know, it was bizarre. And what was particularly bizarre was that everybody after yesterday, Trump gave an economic speech in Detroit where he read off a teleprompter and actually managed to not say something completely insane for a period of an hour, roughly. But, so everybody's kind of thinking, oh, he's back on track now. So, of course, today out comes this. And to be honest with you, I don't think that he necessarily said this intending to suggest assassination or a specific act of violence, because I think he just says stuff just falls out of his mouth. I mean, it literally just, he spews nonsense so much. I don't think he actually puts any thought into what he's saying. And so the comment, regardless of his intention or anything, is awful and extremely dangerous. But the fact that I don't think he even realized it is in many ways even more troubling, I think, for him as a presidential candidate. Because, you know, he can sort of do it now, I guess. But if you're president, I mean, you can, you know, market shift and I mean, you cause major global developments and with your words. I mean, it's not. And so that's what really scares the daylights out of me, frankly, is just when you hear him just very cavalier making these comments that are atrocious and scare the pants off people. That is not good.
So you were at the RNC, you were at the Republican convention, and you were walking around, you were talking to a lot of people, and we've talked on the air since then, and you made note of the fact that one-on-one, lots of people were quite civilized and thoughtful about where their heads were at the moment politically, and including people that were very supportive of Trump. So... I mean, at any point, did you see, because what we see online is, a very different story than that. And so where is that disconnect, or was it there, you just weren't around it, or how, break that part down for me.
Well, I think there is a lot of, there's a lot of distrust of the media, which he is feeding right and left all the time. And so I think that there's a people who do support him, there's a defensiveness. They will. So the Trump campaign's immediate response to today's comments was, oh, no. He's talking about the fact that Second Amendment people will come out and vote, you know, because they really care passionately about this issue, blah, blah, blah. Which, when you look at the words he actually spoke, made no sense. He was clearly talking about, you know, what would happen to Hillary Clinton after she was elected and appointed judges. But regardless, you know, they pushed this narrative out. And his followers are very quick to jump on that and say, no, he just... That's what he just wasn't speaking very articulately about it, but that's what he said. And so I think one of the problems is that the media continues to report on all of the crazy things that he says, but you have a large chunk of people who so distrust the media at this point that they don't believe, which is weird, because in this case, I mean, the video is right there. It's all...
Yeah,
I mean, it's all right there. I mean, you can disagree, but it's not like anybody's fabricating what he said or what the reaction from the crowd was or anything like that. So I think that's one of the problems, is that he caters to this media distrust, and this media distrust, it predates him by a lot and just kind of gets continually worse. And so that allows him to somehow surf over these things that keep developing, with just the dramatic, slightly nutso things that he says. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think that's at the root of it, is that there's they don't want to believe bad things anyway, and he kind of gives them permission to put the blame on the media instead of on him for saying something ludicrous.
Right. And I think, you know, anytime that comes up, I mean, certainly when it comes up with one of my own relatives, I go, by the way, I'm a member of the media, just so you know, just by the way, if you want to maybe backpedal a little bit. And at no point has a politician ever bribed me to report something any one way or another, just FYI on that. But I also, I always point out, I think this is really important to note, that when we say the media now, we must include social media, because social media has democratized media in such a large way. I say that it has not diminished the role of news organizations, but it has certainly widened the pool and created more places to say more things and given more people voice. So there's a lot out there, but I think it's impossible to say the media without talking about your own contribution to it as a citizen and the things that you put into the world as email forwards. You and I have talked about email forwards many times, Rex, of like these emails that are completely inaccurate or mostly inaccurate, that contain some kind of misinformation. Further, they're usually written in Comic Sans in like five different colors of font. There's that.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're like, people are sending them to hundreds of people within their address book. Again, relatives of mine, people that I love and believe are moral and that I believe are intelligent people, send email forwards in Comic Sans in five different colors to people saying, you know, and when I will hit reply and say, well, listen, I'm going to have to fact check you as a professional responsibility. This, and this, in fact, did not happen in 2008. This happened here, and this was this. It's immediately like, you're putting a liberal agenda. No. I'm just telling. You can send that about either candidate, and I'm going to say the same thing. I feel a professional responsibility to correcting misinformation when it is presented to me.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And you're. I mean, the stuff that's propagated is. Just amazing. Just today, in response to a column I wrote, two different people emailed me exactly what you're talking about. You know, they forwarded an email forward trying to show evidence contradicting what I wrote in the column,
oh,
all of
God.
Which was complete garbage. I mean, it was absolutely false. And yet, you know, I'm getting it from multiple different people. So, those types of things have become like factual documents now.
Oh.
And I think, I mean, when you think about pre-social media, people didn't get their hands on documents mm-hmm. so much, unless you were sort of an obsessive, conspiracy theorist who
right.
compiled folders of material. So now people get something and they think, okay, this has to be real because, you know, here it is. I'm looking at it. I can print this out. I can send this to. So there's like a tangible, even if it's electronic, a kind of a tangible thing there, which gives it somehow greater credence in it, even if it's completely nonsensical. So, yeah. And then, of course, nobody's willing to do the actual Google searches, really, which is usually all it takes to debunk things like that. You know, nobody's willing to do that to actually back check it. So, right. Yeah, it's become a huge problem because you just can't fight people who are convinced that they are right and you're wrong. I mean, there's too much out there now that will allow people to prove themselves right, even if they're completely wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what I always tell people whenever I get email forwards, I go, okay, so anytime there's a quote, I want you to grab the text of that and just Google it. Just Google it and make sure that's, in fact, what that person said. Because it's may not be. And then if there's a particular date where, and any time in an email forward it says, and it's a fact that XYZ, you need to Google that. Because I feel like fact is one of those things like, or asserting that you have a fact is often one of those things like powerful or beautiful. Like if you need to insist that it probably isn't the case, right? If you need to remind people that you're powerful or good looking, then maybe, no, those are things that speak for themselves sometimes. You know, I mean, we've talked about this a lot on the show, and I know you and I have discussed this too, and it's something that with my another hat that I wear at the Op-Ed Project, we talk about a lot. But we talk about the work of George Lakoff, who is a linguist and has written extensively on this idea that of how it is we can't hear each other and how we can totally dismiss facts that are presented to us. And I think all of us, I think his stuff should be required reading because I think it's so interesting how he breaks down the neurological process and the emotional process of building like a framework by which to see the world and support your opinions to the point that in testing, when presented with a fact that doesn't work within your framework, you won't even necessarily remember seeing it, much less agree with it. And I think that's a problem, right? When we think about, and so it's like, it's not even that someone's just being a dumbass. It's that like, we're not even speaking the same language. You know, if you're talking about like the gun debate, like one side is talking about safety and the other one is talking about rights. If you could find a place, like where does this Venn diagram possibly overlap? Then you can have a conversation that's productive. But until then, no, not so much. Not so much. We're just going to keep yelling at each other.
Yeah, exactly. I think in this, one of the things along those lines that's happening in the campaign here is that everybody on the left is yelling about Trump, which I happen to think is justified because he's such an unusual candidate. But as soon as you say something to a Trump supporter, their first response is, well, but Hillary, blah, blah, blah. So there, and we see that a lot now, I think. It's hard to sort of accuse someone of something without the immediate response being, oh, yeah, but your person did this, this, and this, and as if that somehow, you know, makes the initial malfeasance not exist anymore or something like that. So,
you know, the one I've heard a lot lately is in conversations, and, I can talk about heavy stuff without losing my mind or being a crazy person or screaming at people. So I like to talk about politics and I like to talk about religion and spirituality and stuff like that because I think it's interesting. Like the two things that we're all raised to, you know, never bring up, I like to bring up. I think the thing I've heard a lot lately is people will say some variation of this. Well, I don't like Trump either, but Hillary seems mean or, you know, the B word or whatever. Like, you know, I'm not asking my president to be my best friend or my neighbor.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And further, what Hillary is criticized for, Trump is in fact praised for.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Know? Oh, yeah. There's a huge double standard.
He's billing himself as a complete jerk bomb who is will say the thing and go get the bad guys. And like if Hillary even tiptoes near that, then she's, you know, the B bomb. And Scott Baio's tweeting pictures of her in front of the C-bomb. And like, all of these crazy things are happening. And I'm like, because she's not nice, you're willing to vote for someone who's like making jokes about racism and genocide and shooting her. Like, I'm not adding up. No. In fact, we expect our male presidents to not particularly be nice, but to be aggressive. And if she even shows a little bit of it, no, she's not acceptable.
Oh yeah. Imagine if she had suggested that the Russians hack Trump's email. I mean,
yeah.
My God, I mean, people's heads would have exploded.
Totally.
So, yeah, there's absolutely, I mean, what's happening, nobody can figure out right now, because frankly, any of a list of like 20 to 30 things that Trump has said or done over the course of this campaign would have ended any other politician's campaign. Like instantly.
Yeah. So
it's not even just today's. I mean, plenty more before this. And yet he keeps going. So it's a very odd thing. And it's kind of I think it's got everybody's head spinning and has for the past, you know, 6-8 months.
It's true. And so why do you think he's able to get away with it when anyone else would be out?
I think he's tapped into a anger and frustration that was. I look at it kind of like a tank that was getting ready to explode, a aluminum tank that was getting ready to blow. And he hit the relief valve on that, because you have a lot of people who are mad about immigrants, who are mad about, you name it, women, this, that, and the other thing, and have felt correctly like they shouldn't say those things out loud.
Right.
And now all of a sudden here comes somebody that gives them permission to be mad and to say things out loud, and boom goes, I mean, just...
Boom goes all kind of dynamite.
So it's this kind of catharsis among a lot of really white male people.
Women.
Some women also. He does have a... I mean, it's not just white male people, but anyway.
Predominantly, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he's... just like it's what they've been waiting for. And that's, I think, why, because that's a large enough percentage of the population, unfortunately, that it's carried him.
Well, there's the theory, right, that like part of this is based in a certain amount. It's like if one's privilege is threatened, one will act out and lash out against who they perceive as threatening their privilege. And so there was a piece, I think it was, I'm almost positive it was in The Atlantic, that was essentially saying that there was a sense of general safety. And I'm not saying this is what I think or what I don't think. I'm just saying the fact remains, this was written about in the damn Atlantic. And it was that there was a sense of like white privilege, that even if you weren't aware of your white privilege, there was some degree of it. There it was, you had it, and the president always looked a certain way. But suddenly in Grant Park, that changed. And that kind of became, like, the minute Obama was elected, suddenly it started to look different. And the possibility then that the president wasn't always going to look the same became disruptive to people who even subconsciously benefited from some degree of racial or gender privilege. And that's kind of a big complicated thing to unpack and dump into the room and think about. And I think it's even harder to say, yes, I am a white person and I'm sure I have benefited from my privilege in ways I can't even imagine. I think that's really hard to say and hard to get your head around. And even being willing to say it, I think there's still tons of ways that you and I have benefited that we don't even know, right?
Absolutely.
But I think that's a really, I mean, I read that piece with great interest, because I think that's a very interesting point, that suddenly, like, if there's a, because there's a lot of the things being said, or like, make America great again and return to this particular time and do this. And you know, there was recently a New York Times video that it was reporters had just gathered at various Trump events. You know, the one, right? I think I saw it because you shared it on Facebook. And it was so interesting, because it was just like crowd shots of people screaming. I mean, at one point, a guy straight up gave a Nazi salute and started screaming Sieg Heil. Like, that gave me chills. And there was people screaming, like, Trump said something about Obama, and someone screaming the N-word back at him. And I was like stunned. And I'm like, guys, I'm not down with this definition of America. This, I mean, we were built on, we were, we were built on. We started off multicultural, for crying out loud. Like, we showed up and took over land that wasn't even ours. let's tell the real story here. Oh boy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And look at the people. A lot of people are not down with this, and that's becoming apparent when you look at the way the poll numbers are starting to shift now. Yeah.
No, does that make you nervous? I'm a little nervous seeing, like, the poll looked so confident. Like, Nate Silver was like, 92% likely Hillary's got it. And I was like, don't say that, Nate Silver, don't talk. Because that means people are going to stay at home. Don't talk. Nobody talk to Nate Silver until after November.
Well, look, I'm out of the prognostication game after having said that he would never get the nomination in the first place. So I don't claim to know what I'm talking about. But the national polls are meaningless, really, and the polls are going to shift more, I'm sure, going up into the election. And God knows what else is going to come out regarding Hillary and emails and stuff that could cause other problems. But, I mean, there's a certain there's a demographic issue at play here, and there's math involved. And barring just pitiful turnout among certain groups of people, voters and whatnot, or just a staggering turnout among people that support Trump, the numbers are, it's tough to add up in his favor, let's put it that way. And, but who knows? I mean, it can change a lot. But see, everybody on the Trump side talks about how he's going to turn out incredible numbers of people who've never voted. But the problem is that everything he says also is going to start bringing out higher numbers of, every time he talks about building a wall, you're going to get higher Latino turnout. Mm-hmm. And every time people, start chanting "All Lives Matter" at his rallies and stuff, I think you boost your African American turnout as well, and also other people of all colors who are bothered by, that kind of thinking. So, I tough to call, but it's a steep climb. But what I think you're seeing now, at least, is like the way he's tanked since his attack against the Khan family, the Gold Star family. I think you're seeing people say, wait a minute, we're better than this. I mean, and I'm not, I say none of this as a resounding endorsement for Hillary Clinton. I'm just talking about him specifically. I think people are going, oh boy.
I think we all watched that, no matter where you fall politically. Like, everyone saw grieving parents on stage that night.
It
was heartbreaking and tough, and for him to be so callous about that was just like, really? Really? You would kick a puppy, dude. I mean, really.
Yes.
Well, I keep making jokes.
That may be what he does tomorrow. Who knows?
Right. Just give him time. I don't want to give him ideas. Right. Well, I keep saying I'm still looking for that Canadian husband who's willing to be marriage-minded by November.
Yeah, that's a wise move.
It's either going to be that, or I'm just going to be like, you know what? I will do this myself. So we're going to go like a Hupke-Guth ticket at some point, or Guth-Hupke, or whichever. We will be co-presidents. We will get this figured out.
You go first, please. I want to be like Biden.
Just chilling.
Be sort of the hype man.
Giving people awkward back rubs. I think we could rock the White House. I'm just saying, it would be good. All right.
It would be a pleasure to serve.
It would indeed. Rex Hupke, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us tonight and staying up late.
You bet. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you.
Good talking to you. Talk to you soon. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, get you the news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN.